To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for another special investigation on the species of the grim darkness of the far future. If we were to turn our attention towards the farthest reaches of the Eastern Fringe, we would find a realm not ruled over by the Imperium of Man, but by a conglomeration of alien species unified under the philosophical teachings of the greater good. This realm would be known as the Tau Empire, and though it has only existed for a scant few millennia, the dynamic Tau have quickly asserted themselves as the dominant power of their region, and they will stop at nothing to defend their stars from any forces who would seek to crush them. Their rapid ascension has been truly remarkable, expanding out from the primitive conditions of their home world to absorb a vast swathe of nearby planets, some of which were conquered by the Fire Caste, while others were peacefully integrated thanks to the diplomatic work of the Water Caste. In this lies one of the secrets behind their rise to dominance. Whenever the Tau encountered an intelligent species, they would extend out an olive branch, offering the newfound aliens with the chance to join the growing empire, pledging themselves towards the greater good in return for assured safety and mutual cooperation. Some were inclined to accept this offer, leading to their integration and designation as a client species. But this strategy of diplomacy would often fall short when attempted on aliens who see their own independence as being a cause worth dying over. These failures, however, have not dissuaded the Tau, and to this day they still continue to find strength in the unity of their empire, always searching for new species who could contribute their lives to a cause greater than themselves. The most well-known of client species would naturally be of the mercenary Kroot and of the insectoid Vespid, but we must acknowledge that there are dozens, perhaps even hundreds of minor species, which have become associated with the realm of the Tau. There are even cases where human settlements have opted to shed their allegiances to the Imperium, often as a means to save themselves from war, and pledging themselves to the Tau Empire, being known to the aliens as the Guevesa. But with this in mind, today we shall be looking over the various client species, starting with a more in-depth explanation as to how the Tau actually integrate a newfound alien world. After, we will cover the role of the individual species in more detail, looking into the benefits they provide for the Empire, of any tensions which exist between their kind, and of the controversial role played by the Ethereals, who oversee all beneath the fold of the greater good. In any case, time is of the essence, and so, my dearest friends, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. Our journey today will lead us to a realm built around the ideas of harmony. And though it may seem like a somewhat laughable notion, we will in fact find it to be evident as we learn of the client species of the Tau Empire. Every single member of the Tau Empire, no matter their creed nor color, will have pledged themselves in service towards the greater good, a philosophical belief which teaches that unified cooperation will advance their societies far more than of individualistic competition. Every aspect of their fledgling realm has been shaped and molded by the principles of their philosophy. But perhaps it is best represented when we look upon the so-called caste system. The Tau are to be born within one of five castes, which are broad social designations that will entirely define the rest of their lives. Each caste has a specific role to play within the Empire, with the burly warriors of the Fire Caste acting as the sole military, whereas the gentle and borderline manipulative members of the Water Caste will act as diplomats and emissaries. Over the passing generations, each of the five castes has followed a slightly different evolutionary path, resulting in a divergent physiology between caste members, but this has been facilitated by the ethereals to ensure that the Tau are best suited to their assigned roles. There is no sense of flexibility for the Tau, and so once you are born into a caste, then you must remain in that role until the day you die, knowing that your children and your children's children will also follow the same life of service. This isn't necessarily to be seen as a negative point, as the rigidity of the caste system serves as one of the empire's greatest strengths. Each Tau will be specialized towards their given societal role, and thanks to the guiding philosophy of the greater good, very few of their kind will seek to selfishly abandon their caste, as they understand that their role to play serves a far higher purpose than individualistic indulgence. And yet, with that said, we must acknowledge that the Tau are far from perfect. Their kind, though rather ingenious, are plagued with weaknesses, some of which are entirely out of their control. It has been noted that their fire warriors are somewhat shorter and less powerful than of an average human, explaining as to why they tend to avoid close quarters combat, favoring instead to engage enemies at range or to mount themselves in great battle suits. Their lifespans are also shorter than of a human. But this brief yet explosive existence should explain to you as to why some would equate the Tau to a brightly burning yet rapidly dimming flame. We could also argue that their rapid development and relative isolation within the Eastern Fringe has left them to be quite ignorant to the true dangers of the galaxy. There are tales of the Tau being deceived, most notably at the hands of the Drukhari, who exploited their naivete so as to steal away a great bounty of their kind to be used in their foul experiments. But these two points pale in comparison to what I believe to be their greatest weakness, which would be of the actual size of their empire. It is difficult to give an accurate figure, but our sources suggest that the Tau rule over around 100 civilized worlds, though these are also accompanied by a litany of mining operations within nearby asteroid fields, orbital stations, and swarms of drone-based satellite networks. Herein lies the base of the problem. The Tau are always seeking to expand the borders of their empire, and so the demand for fire warriors to pave the way is similarly growing, yet with such a meek collection of planets to draw from, they simply do not have the means to reach out and grasp the void for themselves. They could not possibly go man for man within a pitched battle against the unending swarms of the Tyranids, of the brutish hordes of the Orcs, or of the amassed armies of the Imperial Guard, whose commanders will be more than willing to sacrifice a million men just to seize one inch of a bloody field. But the Tau are aware of this, which is partly why they have developed such a reliance upon drones and battle suits so as to amplify their might during a battle. They are thusly less reliant upon risking the lives of their own fire warriors, allowing them to deploy only a fraction of their forces while still retaining their own combat effectiveness. With that said, however, there are certain gaps which cannot be filled by technology. As the Tau continue to expand, they will be stretched thinner and thinner, possibly risking their ability to defend their own territories out in the distant colonies. But to shore up the manpower of the Empire, the Tau have looked inwards towards the teachings of the greater good and found that the answer to their problems lies within the hearts of the sentient species of the galaxy. When a new alien civilization is encountered, The Tau will seek to integrate the Xenos, incorporating them within the greater empire, in the hopes that, through unity, that they will be able to push themselves towards new heights of glory. Thus, when we look upon a world of the Tau Empire, we will find not just the azure-toned faces of the Tau, but of a diverse array of exotic aliens, including the quasi-avian Kroot, the fungoid Chapaktin, the squats of the Demiurge, and even of wayward humans lulled away from the Imperium by promises of a better life. Some of these will have been welcomed, with the primary intent of them serving alongside the armies of the Fire Caste, whereas others will possess unique traits or physiological strengths which can be used to support the wider Tau. We should note, however, that the Tau do not only seek to integrate aliens as a means of compensating for their own weaknesses, and rather they do truly wish to extend the benefits of the greater good to all who are willing to listen. There is a refreshing sense of compassion to be found within the Tau Empire, where their kind will see the species of the wider galaxy as living in an age of darkness, and that through their diplomatic efforts, will they be ushered into a new state of enlightenment. It might be seen as something of a paradox for the new species to be liberated from the dark through their submission to an alien overlord. Yet we must remember that the Tau will see all who follow in the greater good as being more or less equal. There will be no sense of discrimination against those who comply, only a shared sense of purpose behind pledging yourself towards the greater benefit of the entire empire. As a more tangible point, we must acknowledge that the material improvements brought by the Tau to their integrated worlds, which often uplift the lowest social strata more than anyone else, are not to be dismissed as mere propaganda. They will not provide a generic blanket of unwanted gifts to their new comrades, and rather the Tau will identify any weaknesses within their species or society, which will then be rapidly addressed and solved. For example, if the homeworld of their species was plagued by toxic winds, then the Tau would deploy a vast network of air purification drones to improve the habitability and overall quality of life for their kind. In return for all this, the Ethereals will simply expect that the new species follows in the teachings of the greater good by contributing their efforts and lives towards something greater than their individual ambitions. Yet, as we will soon learn, if a species does in fact reject these teachings, then there can be no room for negotiations, as despite the Tau being so open to diplomacy, we must not forget that their diplomats will always be flanked by an armed cadre of the Fire Caste. Though the integration of a new species is no easy task, the Tau have since become experts on the matter. Great swarms of drones will be released into the cosmos, drifting from star to star and from world to world to record, document, and analyze all which their advanced sensors can detect. Most of the time, this will only reveal resources or potentially habitable worlds, but from time to time, they will receive the distinct signals of an intelligent and sentient species. In these cases, an alert will be sent back to the worlds of the Tau, prompting a colonization fleet to be dispatched, replete with cadres of the Fire Caste and teams of Water Caste diplomats eager to make contact with the newfound aliens. The first stage will always involve a rigorous period of analysis, where stealth drones will record vast swathes of intimate information from the targeted species, including their language, their societal behaviors, and of their level of technology. This serves two purposes. Firstly, the Tau need to be sure that the species will actually be compatible with the rest of the empire. And so, if the species displays itself as overtly hostile or self-destructive, then the diplomats will need to take more of a cautious approach. Secondly, the members of the Watercast will use their data to decipher the alien language and to learn of the subtle social cues given off by the species. This will then be codified into a protocol on how to commune with the aliens, with the empathic diplomats quietly developing ways to manipulate the emotions of their targets, seeing their exploitation as being but a means to extend the teachings of the greater good. Once prepared, the Tau delegation will make planetfall. This will usually spark a riotous uproar amongst the aliens, especially if they live within a relatively primitive state, as the sudden arrival of great spaceships and hovering battle suits will be quite the unexpected surprise. The diplomats, flanked by their Firecast bodyguards, will quickly work their linguistic magic to soothe the panicked aliens, gently coercing them towards peace with carefully placed gestures and soft, honeyed words. An invitation will then be extended to the new species, offering them with the chance to join with the Tau Empire, providing them with safety and technological upliftment in return for their pledge to uphold the core teachings of the greater good. Acceptance will lead to a period of jubilation, followed by the rapid deployment of the Tau Colonial Expedition, who will set about the process of erecting new dwellings for the Tau, while also supporting the established species with whatever problems they might be facing. Sometimes, however, the newfound aliens will be less interested in cooperation. They might be suspicious of the Tau, wary of the diplomats' ability to speak their own tongue, and so it is not unheard of for them to politely refuse this offer. The Tau, however, never truly intended for this to be a space for negotiations. Their kind employ a strategy known as gunship diplomacy, where if an alien species rejects their approach, then they will simply deploy the armies of the Firecast to force the natives into complying with their compassionate demands. This may seem cruel, but for the Tau, it is utterly necessary. They cannot possibly risk leaving a belligerent alien species to its own devices, as one day their warriors could turn their attention to the stars and potentially threaten the safety of those within the Empire. Thus, at gunpoint, the aliens will be given a final choice: submit or die. If they accept at this point, then the Firecast will still spread out to compel the more influential members of their species to embrace the unity of the greater good. Some settlements will be isolated by newly formed blockades, safeguarding the construction of the Tau colonies, which will only be lifted once the Watercast diplomats are entirely sure that the species has peacefully submitted to the Tau. This period can naturally be quite contentious between the natives and the colonists. Sporadic attacks, assassination attempts, and resistance movements are all to be seen as commonplace, but they can only be permitted to last for so long. The Ethereals will not tolerate a client species to reject the greater good with such violence, and so they will permit the Firecast to do whatever is necessary to bring the natives to heel. In time, their kind will be forcibly, then subtly drawn towards the teachings of the greater good, possibly as a result of them realizing that there can be no other alternative to compliance when faced against the technologically superior armies of the Tau. Unfortunately, however, there are other times where peace simply cannot be reached, and if the aliens have rejected all possible routes towards cohabitation, then the Tau will be forced to redefine them as a threat to be eliminated. With ruthless and overwhelming firepower, the Tau will systematically purge the world of its native inhabitants, decimating their population by exploiting every weakness detected during their initial phase of analysis. Perhaps the most notable example of this would be of when the Tau attempted to parley with the green-skinned brutes of the Orcs. Their interspecies relations were set off on the sourest path after the local war boss massacred their watercaste delegation, simply because he had never before crumped a squishy blue alien. After this encounter, the Tau did not bother to seek reconciliation, as they quickly realized that these barbarians understood only war, and thus they rightfully returned with a great war of their own. The Orcs, however, never gave up in their battle, and the two species have remained as mortal enemies, though the Greenskins tend to view anyone as an enemy if it means that they can get stuck in with a good fight. But returning to a scenario where the Tau have entered into a war with a less militaristic species, we should realize that after what is usually a brief and bloody period of one-sided destruction, that the Tau diplomats will often signal for a ceasefire and extend a final offer of peace. This is sent in the hopes that the overwhelming displays of Tau firepower will be enough to convince the belligerent aliens that they stand no chance against the Firecast and that their only salvation will be found within the embrace of unity. Unfortunately, however, offering peace to those whose homes and lives you have just destroyed is rarely to be met with success. The native aliens, though outmanned and outgunned, will often be forced to fight to the bitter end, and as the final member of their kind dies, their last sight will be of the Tau constructing their colonies, as they will have now claimed this world for the greater good. But if the species agrees to cooperate, then the next phase will involve their integration with the wider Tau Empire. The natives will often be ushered onto the Tau ships and forcibly disseminated across the distant worlds of the Tau, with their diaspora intended to subtly reduce the influence of their kind, whilst also settling them into their new positions of labor. The Tau will assess the populace, categorizing them based upon their strengths, before assigning them with roles within the most appropriate of military or civil industries. Their homeworld, meanwhile, will be transformed, and as it takes on the facade of another colony of the Tau Empire, we must wonder as to whether or not any of the integrated species ever regret in their choice to join. On the one hand, the greater good does provide an equitable and unified society for all who follow its teachings, but on the other, maybe it is better to fight and die in the defense of your home, so as to not see it change into something you could no longer recognize. The following chapters will cover some of the client species of the Tau Empire in a little more detail, and so we should first begin with the most famous example, naturally being of the Kroot. In brief, these are avian humanoids who serve in an auxiliary role to the Firecast, contributing huge groups of their carnivore warriors to assist the hunter cadres in their many deployments. The Kroot and Tau share a long history with one another, with their kind initially joining the Empire during the so-called First Sphere expansion phase during the 38th millennium. Their warriors were encountered during a battle with the barbarous brutes of the Orcs, with the Tau being prompted to intervene after noting their impressive tenacity when fighting against such an overwhelming foe. The combined forces of the Tau and Kroot would then go on to purge the nearby systems of their Orky taint, eventually culminating in the liberation of their home planet of Pek. In the wake of this victory, a prominent Kroot shaper, named as Angkor Prok, pledged his kind and their own consortium of worlds to support the Tau in any future wars, though they would require a regular payment for this service. In addition, the Kroot worlds would be preserved in their natural state, with the Tau only being permitted to construct small outposts for their kind. And though this freedom was quite unusual for a client species, the Tau diplomats chose to accept, not wishing to break the trust of their new allies. For the Tau, the Kroot offered them with the crucial manpower they needed to enact further military campaigns deeper within the cosmos, whilst also compensating for their own lack of prowess in melee by being such vicious and bloodthirsty fighters. For the Kroot, however, their association with the Empire would provide them with unprecedented opportunities, mainly from their deployment upon distant war zones where they could feast upon the dead, to absorb new genetic material, which would then be brought back to their home upon Peck. The Tau are rather perturbed at the sight of their aggressive tactics, which they look down upon as being primitive, yet are made even more uncomfortable by their bloody and carnivorous habits. This, however, is a core part of the Kroot culture. Their kind gains strength and knowledge from absorbing the DNA of creatures who they consume, although as a sign of respect, they have sworn to never feast upon Tau flesh, even if it does seem rather tempting. For an outsider, the contrast between the technologically ascendant Tau living within their egalitarian utopia and of the tribal warriors of the Kroot, adorned in loose rags, dwelling within the tall trees of their homes, can be rather striking. Yet the two species have formed a fierce bond to one another, each being prepared to defend the other, even if it results in their own destruction. There are some Kroot, however, who are less favorable to the concept of living beneath the fold of the greater good. Even though the Kroot do not necessarily promulgate these ideas, they do support the Tau, who seek to spread its teachings, yet this can be a rather droll concept for a carnivore warrior. As such, some will instead choose to leave their homes and the wider empire to set out into the stars to fight as mercenaries, joining with rogue traders or Drukhari bands within Komorach to fight for their bounties of coin and flesh. At times, these Kroot can end up selling their services to the enemies of the Tau, but this is to be avoided at all costs, as they would never seek to betray their saviors nor tarnish the image of their entire species. Nevertheless, for those who do remain with the Tau, their place is almost always to be found upon a battlefield. They will be attached to almost every hunter cadre, to act as scouts, shock troops, and melee experts pushing back against the enemy hordes to keep the members of the Firecast safe from the chaos of the front line. Most of their kind will fight with rather crude weapons, often fixed with great blades, though some shapers will be granted with the advanced armaments of the Tau, which in all fairness are often rejected due to their lack of melee applicability. As I mentioned, the Kroot will consume the dead to absorb their DNA, and it is often something of a personal goal to their kind to extract the widest range of biological material as possible from as many species as they can before their life's end. It was once speculated that fringe scientists from the Earthcast would study this practice, in the hopes that they would be able to replicate the concept of gene shaping for large-scale agricultural applications. But thus far, we have found no evidence of this occurring. And so perhaps it is simple imperial propaganda intended to wedge a divide between the Tau and the Kroot. Nevertheless, the Kroot and Tau, though innately bound to one another, live separate lives and rarely intermingle, unless of course their presence is required upon a battlefield. Most species will undergo varying degrees of cultural absorption, yet the Kroot are granted with exceptional independence, with their homes being almost entirely free from the Tao, aside from the aforementioned outposts, where only a few Tao will actually reside. With their differences, it can be quite interesting to compare the role of the Ethereals with that of the Shapers. Both groups are seen as the spiritual and governing leaders of their societies, yet their methods and practices couldn't be seen as more distinct. The influence of the Ethereals appears to be rooted in a mysterious form of biological persuasion, where ever since their first appearance within the Tao tribes, they have held a subtle, yet distinct sway over the minds of their fellows. Even to this day, most will find it challenging to speak out against their rule, almost as if there was some unseen force compelling them towards accepting unity whilst quelling their dissident thoughts. The Shapers, meanwhile, maintain their authority over the kindreds not by force, but by respect. The tribal families rely upon the wisdom of the old Shaper to guide their evolutionary path to one of strength rather than failure. This Shaper will be the first to consume and absorb newly discovered life, and through a complex procedure, they will determine if the genetic material of this creature will be well integrated with the Kroot genome, or if it will lead to maladaptive growths, dooming their kind. I previously mentioned how the Kroot will sometimes act as mercenaries to species separate from the Tao Empire, but the Tao have been known to exploit this practice so as to spread their own forces further than would have otherwise been possible. For instance, the Kroot of the Uch-8 kindred are well known throughout the galactic south as being trustworthy mercenaries who will fight on behalf of the Imperium should a governor be prepared to pay their fee. Yet, aside from earning their payment, the Kroot will also be serving the Tao through some rather duplicitous means. They will smuggle watercast diplomats, human enlightenment cells, pathfinder teams, and troves of Tao propaganda to be secretly disseminated across the imperial worlds they encounter, thus spreading the light of the greater good far beyond the reaches of the Tao Empire. The next species to note would be of the insectoid Vespid, hailing from the eponymous world also named as Vespid. From orbit, the atmosphere of this gas giant appears rich with swirling iridescent particles glinting out as motes of light before being swallowed by the deep and rich tones of violet and magenta. But as we move within, past the raging storm clouds, we will find an incredibly thin layer of the stratosphere caught between destruction both above and below, in which a somewhat stable region has formed. Great rocky islands will drift here, kept afloat by strange crystalline protrusions jutting out from below, whilst on top, small areas of flat land will have been carved down to be used as the foundations for the Vespid's home. When the water caste first sent their delegation down through the clouds, they quickly discovered that despite their best efforts, that they simply could not commune with the curious insectoids. From what they could gather, the creatures were just so profoundly alien that there was no chance that they could possibly be integrated within the Empire, nor understand the concept of the greater good. The insectoids would simply buzz around, darting through the clouds, clicking out, sometimes with perceived aggression at the Tau delegation, before diving back down, disappearing into the storms. Yet, upon hearing this, the Ethereals made an unexpected decision and chose to intervene themselves by designing a headset which could interpret the clicking language of the Vespid and translate it into the Tau lexicon. This communion helm, however, appeared to be something of a miracle. As soon as the first Vespid equipped this device, it seemed to immediately halt in its curious behaviors. It gently fluttered down before prompting its kin to follow suit until, in rather short order, their entire society had peacefully accepted their offer of being integrated within the wider Tau Empire. Now, this point is rather controversial, but we must ask as to whether the Communion Helm was simply a tool for translating their language, or if it actually served to control the minds of the aliens, forcibly shifting their perception to be more favorable of the Tau. It has long been speculated that, despite the lack of psychic ability within the Tau, that the Ethereals do in fact exert some form of subliminal control over the rest of their kind. And so it would not be inconceivable to believe that they would mimic this control over another species. Perhaps the need for an invasive technological bridge between the two species proves the original diplomats as being right in believing that the Vespid were incompatible with the Tau Empire. The Kroot, for instance, formed their alliance after being liberated by the Tau, and they did not need some mysterious device to facilitate cooperation between their groups. Thus, we are left to wonder about what would have happened if the Ethereals never created their helms. But that will likely be a topic left for another day. In any case, those who do now wear the helms will act as the leaders to a small group known as a strain, where they will translate the directives of the Tau before enforcing them upon their fellow kin. The Imperium has come to call these groups as Stingwings, whereas the Tau refer to them as Malkor, but thus far we are unaware of what the Vespid actually choose to name themselves as. Standing notably taller than an average human, the Vespid are covered in a tough, barbed exoskeleton, and upon their backs we will find a large set of buzzing wings. Supposedly, their three sets of eyes will perceive light in different wavelengths, enabling them to see a wide spectrum ranging from infrared all the way up to ultraviolet. Within their home world, the Vespid will live in small hives, consisting of the aforementioned strains, where each group will display a different coloration or pattern upon their frame. It has been noted that the female Vespid are larger than the males, and typically it will fall to them to fly down below their floating islands to retrieve the strange crystals which grow in the stormy depths. These crystals give off a slight resonant tone, which can be modulated by the ultrasonic buzz of the Vespid's wings to alter their function. When the Tau first encountered their kind, for instance, they found that the Vespid had used the crystals to create weapons of mass destruction, which is part of the reason as to why they did not immediately resort to war when diplomacy seemed to fail. It has also been speculated that the Ethereals wished to integrate the Vespid simply to gain access to their crystalline deposits. But thus far, we have only seen limited uses of the material within the Tau Empire. It is, however, a central component to the neutron blasters used by the Stingwing warriors. The Vespid can fire off a beam, then modulate the harmonic frequency of the crystal so that it matches that of their target, causing their atoms to simply strip away from their form until they disintegrate down into dust. Perhaps the most controversial of species to have joined with the Tau Empire would be of the wayward sheep of mankind, who the Tau have named as the Gueveza. There is technically no restriction to prohibit anyone from joining with the Empire, so long as they accept the teachings of the greater good. But it is often quite a surprise when a human world secedes from imperial rule in favor of serving aliens over their own kind. In the Tau lexicon, Guevesa translates to human helper, and they have been readily incorporated into the empire, often being cited within fringe colonies, which were formerly controlled by the distant Imperium. Being so far from Terra, these far-flung settlements would often be left to fend for themselves, rarely receiving much in the way of material or military support, and so they would often fall victim to predatory aliens or unseen horrors from beyond the void. Yet, as we have discovered, the Tau will always extend an offer of peace before declaring total war. As a result of this, water caste diplomats would make planetfall to discuss with the governors or settlement leaders as to the needs of their people and of whether or not they would be better supplied if they merely pledged to join the Tau. Most Imperials are deeply xenophobic, yet would have never met with an alien in their life. And so to suddenly stand face to face with one who smiles so warmly and speaks in such perfect Gothic would naturally force them to consider their current situation. Some will foolishly fight, but others will consider the fact that if Terra cannot send them supplies, then perhaps they cannot send their armies, and so maybe for the good of their people should they shed the weight of the Imperium and adopt a new master. There was once a theory which posited that the Tau would sterilize the human auxiliaries within the Empire so as to ensure that they would die out in a passing generation, but thus far we have seen no evidence of this occurring, and so we could consider this story as yet more Imperial propaganda. The Tau, however, do not seek to discriminate against the humans who have joined. In fact, the humans who have accepted their rule will actually be permitted to continue in their veneration and worship of the Emperor, as the Tau do not see their personal beliefs as being incompatible with the greater good. Even though the Tau are accepting of the humans, we must acknowledge that the wider Imperium will see these secessionists as being the foulest of traitors who should be hunted down and exterminated. Even though they still worship the Emperor, the Ecclesiarchy will brand them as having been spiritually corrupted, claiming that they have directly gone against the Emperor's wishes, a crime which can only lead to a merciless sentencing of death. With all that said, it can be quite the challenge for a human to shed their own qualms about joining with the Tau, as we must remember that the teachings of the Imperial Creed are to be enforced from birth, leading to a level of indoctrination that can be hard to break. Rather than imposing an immediate cultural transformation upon the wayward humans, the Tau will instead begin their integration process by tangibly improving upon the material conditions of the colony. Food synthesizers will be dispersed throughout famine-afflicted regions. Medical technologies will be sent to disease-ravaged populations, and drone defense systems will hover above vulnerable settlements, all of which will establish a visible contrast between the Imperial neglect and Tau beneficence. This material foundation will then be followed by the gradual transition of their ideology from one of xenophobic isolationism to one of egalitarian unity. Water caste specialists will identify compatible elements within the existing culture of the humans to be used as the linchpins behind introducing the concepts of the greater good in a way which promotes understanding rather than rejection. For example, on worlds with a strong ecclesiastical influence, the more selfless aspects of the Emperor will be emphasized, while the aggressive xenophobia will be recontextualized as a misinterpretation of his design. Similarly, on worlds once under the influence of the Mechanicus, the populace will be praised for their technological tradition, before being introduced to the advancements of the Earth caste, showing that through their unity, that the Tau have eclipsed Mars in but a short few millennia. Once these features have been identified, the Tau will then begin to extol the virtues of the greater good, linking them to the previous human ideology as the logical next step towards enlightenment. The most sophisticated aspect of human integration, however, will always involve generational targeting. While first-generation converts receive respect for their decision to embrace the greater good, the integration resources focus disproportionately on their children, whose formative experiences will occur within Tau society, free from imperial conditioning. Educational systems for the Gwevesa youth emphasize not only the philosophy of the greater good, but also include extensive interactions with their Tau peers, normalizing cross-species cooperation from the earliest opportunity. The sharing of languages ensures a fluency in both Gothic and of the Tau lexicon, creating bridges between the two cultures, who in other circumstances would be engaged in a bloody war. Historical lessons will present the story of the Imperium through carefully contextualized lenses, framing them as misguided souls who would be better off for embracing the greater good and shedding their state of stagnancy. The Gwevesa contribute to the Tau Empire across a spectrum far broader than most auxiliary species, as their adaptability allows them to be better integrated within a wide range of fields, as opposed to the strict niches often enforced on other species. Most visible are the Gwevesa military formations, which now supplement the Firecast's operations across the Empire's frontiers. Human auxiliaries will fill crucial tactical roles that leverage their differences to the Tau, such as of their impressive endurance, psychological resilience, and of their rapid adaptability to incredibly varied war zones. Their familiarity with conventional imperial military doctrine also provides the Firecast with intimate intelligence on the morale and habits of the imperial armies, which their drones will often fail to gather. Also, a Gwevesa will be able to easily infiltrate a human army by posing as a survivor from a large battle, allowing the Firecast to use them as covert agents, opening up a swathe of strategic opportunities for the Tau. Even though the Tau do truly offer humanity with the benevolent hand of integration, we must acknowledge that the roots of the Imperial Creed run incredibly deep. And so it is not uncommon for the Gwevesa to rebel against the Tau after years of peace. Human supremacist sects are known to rise up from the shadows, their members disgusted at their old compliance with the vile aliens, desperately seeking to prove their faith to the Emperor by overthrowing the yoke of Tau rule. Quite often, they will be unsuccessful, with the Firecast utterly exterminating the rebels, which itself will lead to further unrest within the colony. Though the order of the greater good will have been re-established, the human survivors of the rebellion will be faced with a period of indirect persecution and overt scrutiny by the Tau, as they attempt to root out any similar sects while dissuading others from repeating their crimes. This, however, is the case for every client species within the Tau Empire, and mankind is no special case to be treated any differently just because their emperor sits dead upon a broken throne. To join in the Tau Empire means to shed one's old allegiances and to pledge yourself only to the teachings of the greater good, contributing your every effort towards the overall betterment of your world and of your newfound kin. The entire realm of the Tau Empire is filled with dozens of client species, and even if they are not as well represented as of the Tau themselves, they still have a vital role to play in supporting their compatriots. The nomadic demiurge, for instance, are a species of impressively short humanoids who, aside from standing rather squat, are well known for their skills in mining and trading. Quite interestingly, though, the Tau are actually wrong in naming them as a client species, as the demiurge are in fact just akin of the Leagues of Votan, who established a trustworthy trading link to the Tau. It truly boggles the mind on how the Tau could be so wrong on this matter, and it calls into question as to whether or not any of the other client species are actually loyal to the Tau, or if their diplomats are simply ignorant fools who falsely assume that every interaction has been beneficial to the Empire. The Nikasa, however, were the first species to be successfully integrated into the Tau Empire. And in contrast to the Tau themselves, these creatures are incredibly potent psykers. Appearing as large, ivory-colored bears, the eyeless beasts sense the world around them through the psionic pulses of the warp, a gift which is apparently granted by a series of specialized glands found within their skulls. We have very few records of their kind, but according to our sources, they will float through the air, as their bodies are ill-suited for walking upon the earth. It seems that within the Empire they once served as scouts, piloting highly advanced spacecrafts to explore the nearby regions of the void. But in more recent years, we have no clear information as to how they contribute towards the greater good. The Tau did attempt to integrate a species before the blind Ursines, however, and these aliens were known as the Poktroon. We know very little about their kind, other than that after they allied themselves with the Tau, that their entire species went extinct from a plague, which was likely spread from the Tau themselves, since they were in fact immune to its effects. Wasting no time, the Tau swept in to colonize their old home world, promptly renaming it as Bork-An, which in its own way feels rather disrespectful to their fallen allies. Perhaps if the Kroot home of Pek had also suffered a similar fate during the war in the Place of Union, then the Tau would have also wiped the cultural legacy of the Kroot clean, and maybe that fate has fallen to more worlds than we otherwise know. The grotesque Galg are another species of the Empire, who had created a paradise upon their home world, allowing their kind to live in unabashed luxury for thousands of glorious years. Curiously, they readily abandoned their enviable life of bucolic ease after the Tau sent a diplomatic delegation with the Watercast claiming that the Galg wished for a life where they could contribute towards something greater than themselves. With that said, there are individual members of this species who fled from their home to become mercenaries, and they have a rather different story as to their integration. They claim that the Tau lied and forced the Galg to join with the Empire, with their kind being conquered. And I would sooner believe this story, given how shady the Tau seem to be when it comes to their dealings with prospective species. There are many more client species of the Tau Empire to discuss, but with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you so much for listening to this sermon in its entirety. And as I close this chapter once more, know that I will wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.